Welcome to Kevin JJ's Movie Mania Podcast, where Kevin and JJ discuss everything and anything they can about the movies they love and sometimes about the movies they hate. In this episode, Kevin and JJ are going to discuss another deserted island movie. And each of our picks are pretty elaborate, and we have a lot to say about it, so it might take a while. We hope you enjoy. Hi, everybody. Here we go again. We're going to do another deserted island pick. I have the number generator set up between 1970 and 2013. And since JJ conceded last time, if we have the same pick, I'll be conceding this time and picking an alternate. So here we go. Gonna pick the number. And the year is 1989.
Okay. Looking over my list for 1989, I see that it was a very strong year. Really, anything kind of floating around my top 10 could have been my number one. But if pressed, I would have to choose Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
What do the Nazis want with you, Dad?
They wanted my diary.
Yeah?
I knew I had to get that book as far away from me as I possibly could.
Dr. Jones.
Yes?
I will take the book now.
What book?
You have the diary in your pocket.
You jolt. Do you think my son would be that stupid that he would bring my diary all the way back here? You didn't, did you? You didn't bring it, did you?
Well,
you did.
Look, we'll discuss this later.
I should have mailed it to the Marx Brothers.
Will you take it easy?
Take it easy? Why do you think I sent it home in the first place so it wouldn't fall into their hands?
I came here to save you.
Oh, yeah? And who's going to come to save you, Junior?
I told you. Don't call me Junior.
Look what you did! I can't believe what you did!
Which is funny, because that's also what I would have chosen.
And I'm somehow not shocked.
It's one of those, picking my one wasn't hard, but picking my two is almost impossible.
Right. Right. Truth be told, you know, as I'm going to start talking about it, I really was going flipping back and forth for number one between that and another one. Can I say what it is?
No, don't say it because it might be what I have.
Okay. And there's a reason why I specifically didn't go for the other one, and I'm going to stick with Indiana Jones. And I guess I'll say it after you say yours.
Okay.
Okay. Well, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade is a fantastic movie.
Yes,
you can't call it high art, you know, but it's just unabashedly fun. And for me, and I think I've talked about this with you before, Kevin, it's the first Indiana Jones movie I ever saw.
Really?
Yeah, because I was 9.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, maybe I saw Raiders of the Lost Ark or Temple of Doom fleetingly on TV or something.
Right.
But to my memory, you know, being 9, I don't ever remember having like a tie to either of those two movies. Like, I don't think it was one that my parents or my grandma, you know, put in front of me on the TV set as a kid. I don't think it's one that I landed on flipping channels. So I kind of went in, you know, completely not knowing what was, you know, before me.
See, I grew up with Temple of Doom.
Oh, you saw that first?
I saw Temple of Doom first. Great parenting, Mom and Dad. And
Bleeding hearts.
Yeah, exactly. But Last Crusade was the one I saw the most. To this day, it's the movie I saw the most in the theater.
Right.
I saw it 5 times in the theater.
Okay. So I'm curious then of your opinion, just briefly, of Raiders of the Lost Ark, because that was 81, was it? Or 80?
Oh, I think Raiders of the Lost Ark is definitely a better movie than Last Crusade.
Yeah, I arguably I agree. I would say it would be a better, you know, film, yes.
Right, but Last Crusade's better than Temple of Doom.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I can watch Temple of Doom and zone out and my, you know, kind of gloss over and just enjoy what I'm watching, but I don't think there's anything particularly outstanding about it. It's just
it's not as fun. It's a little too dark.
A little too dark, a little too, I don't know, there's just something kind of missing from the other two, at least for me.
And notice the listeners aren't, you know, asking about our opinion on Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. But
we're not good. Well, I think you enjoyed that pretty much, didn't you?
I did. But yeah. It's in a totally, almost completely nostalgic opinion, not artistic opinion.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean, I didn't think that movie was bad. I just thought it was
it pales.
I would say pales and a little bit erratic.
Right.
But anyway, getting back to The Last Crusade.
But we digress.
We digress. I just remember seeing Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade when I was 9 years old. I probably saw it 3 or 4 times in the theaters, maybe 5. I don't remember the exact number, but it was just this ridiculous entertainment that I ate up as a 9-year-old. And I thought that, you know, I guess Harrison Ford was firmly established, you know, very comfortable in that role by now, having it be the third film.
Oh, yeah.
And I just remember, it also was probably my first knowledge of who Sean Connery was. And what's so funny about that is he's this iconic figure of James Bond. He is the James Bond.
Oh, yeah.
And
I didn't know who he was.
No, there's no way to know. Nor did we really know, you know, that he was this great character from The Untouchables 2 years prior.
Right.
Because that really is a movie we wouldn't have been shown by our parents. But, you know, not knowing who Sean Connery was ahead of time, him playing Indy's father, you know, he's this kind of, he's certainly not a James Bond-esque figure. So
no, he's very milquetoast.
Yes.
You know, like, not up to the challenge in most, most instances.
Right. So that's funny, because when I eventually did see him in more, you know, in better leading roles, certainly from his heyday, I was like, oh, okay, I get it. But I certainly didn't get it from Indiana Jones.
Right.
So just everything about the movie, it tells a great adventure story. I think River Phoenix is in one of the early scenes, right?
Yeah, he plays the young
Indy.
Indy, telling the origin of his fedora.
Right. Love that scene. It set the tone. It set the pace. And once the adventure kind of takes Indy, you know, through World War II Europe, I was just eating it up. It's probably one of the first World War II influenced movies that I ever saw.
Yeah, like for a 9-year-old kid, like how many experiences with Nazis in the movies did you have? Like,
it's probably the most impressionable thing that we can say that we saw firsthand in our lives.
Right.
And funny, well, not funny, but interesting that it was kind of handled as like an adventure, fun kind of tone. Meanwhile,
right.
It was anything but, you know. But I loved Allison Duty, who played, was her name Elsa?
Yeah.
I think, yeah. I don't know. I just was obsessed with her.
Dr. Elsa Schneider.
That's right. And I don't think she went anywhere, unfortunately, but I
other than Major League 2, but that's about it.
Okay, well. but I was infatuated with her. I thought she was gorgeous. And, you know, just the scenes in Italy and the scenes in the tunnels with all the rats.
Yep.
And
the comedy that came from Denholm Elliott playing.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he stole every scene he was in.
He certainly did. And, you know, just the Nazi scenes. My favorite scene, of course, is when Indy and his father are tied to the chair.
Oh, yeah.
Have to figure a way to escape the fire. And they, you know, kind of haphazardly stumble upon one of the Nazi headquarters. And it's just hysterical. It's so funny.
It is very. It is, and that's what's so great about it, is that it's a pretty serious movie from, like, a content, you know, idea about the Nazis taking religious relics for power and yada, yada, yada.
Oh, yeah.
But it is so lighthearted, and almost every discovery is a joke or there's something funny about it. Like, it's just, it's so well handled in that respect.
It is. And another set piece that I loved was Indiana trying to escape his pursuers on the Zeppelin up in the sky.
Yes.
So funny.
His fly yes, land no line is just hilariously delivered.
I don't think I recall what it was.
What's that?
What'd you say?
No, when Strong Connery says, "I didn't know you can fly a plane."
Oh.
And, you know, Harrison Ford goes, "Fly yes." And then he detaches and he goes, "Land no."
That's right, that's right.
And that makes me, that always makes me laugh.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
"And what did you find, Junior?"
"Junior? Dad?
Please, what does it always mean? Is this Junior?"
"That's his name. Henry Jones Junior.
Like Indiana.
We named the dog Indiana."
"May we go home now, please?"
"The dog? You are named after the dog?"
"Got a lot of fond memories of that dog." "Ready?
Ready?"
"Indy, Henry, follow me.
I know the way."
"Got lost in his own museum, huh?"
"Uh-huh."
"After you, Junior."
"Yes, sir."
And then, of course, is the climax where they're all looking for, what's it called, the Cup of Life?
The Holy Grail.
The Holy Grail, yeah. Duh. And that scene was just expertly handled. My palms are always sweaty, even if I watch it today, watching that whole sequence where Indy's trying to, you know, make it to the other side on, you know, safely.
Right.
And all around him, he sees the skeletons of all the people who have failed.
And it's such a testament to how Spielberg can make and Lucas can make,
yes,
a movie, because, you know, this is, you know, dark age times,
mm-hmm,
technology, and it's like bandsaws. Like, there's no way in any universe that would be possible with their technology.
Mm-hmm.
But you,
yeah,
buy it completely that there's this pathway that bandsaws can come out and kill you.
That's, you know, I never thought of it that,
yeah,
way.
Yeah, it's absolutely absurd, but it's just handled in a way that you accept.
You go with it, you accept it, you suspend your disbelief in the name of fun, and you just don't go with it, yeah.
Right, because any lesser filmmaker, you get to that scene, everyone's like, "Oh, come on, saws." But nope, not in that scene. You're just like, "Yep, be careful of the saws."
Right. Yep, and, you know, the fates of several people in that scene are very potent.
Yep.
And I can't talk enough great about it. It's still to this day. I own the DVD. If it's on TV, I watch it. It had everything.
Infinitely watchable from any
Infinitely
scene
watchable.
Movie.
Right. And, yeah, that would be it. And I'm very curious to hear what yours is, because, again, like I say, I thought 89 was a very strong year. I could have picked one of any 10 that I have on this list. So,
well, yeah, I agree. 89 for me is so hard because there's, like, excellent. There's a huge list of excellent movies.
Right.
And there's a list of dumb movies that, mm-hmm, I can watch over and over and over and over and over. Like, 10 of them.
Well, that's the point. That's kind of the point of this Desert Island thing, because,
right,
you know, Indiana Jones, it's excellent and it's fun.
I agree.
Which is why it was your number one, too, I'm sure.
Okay, so I'll move on to the one I would pick.
Okay.
Which is not nearly as fun.
Oh, boy.
It's not a fun movie, but it's probably one of the most inspirational movies that I've ever seen, and I'm obsessed with it. And the good thing that we both had the same first movie, because when I say this, mixing the podcast together will have good music.
Okay.
Well, I'll say it. So my choice is Glory.
Uh-huh.
Directed by Edward Zwick.
Does the whole world got a stomp in your face?
Nigga, you better get your hands off me.
Ain't no niggas around here, you hear me?
Oh, I see. So the white man give you a couple of stripes. Next thing you know, you hollering, ordering everybody around like you the master himself. Nigga, you ain't nothing but the white man's dog.
And what are you? So full of hate, you just want to go out and fight everybody. Because you've been whipped and chased by hounds. Well, that might not be living, but it sure as hell ain't dying. And dying's what these white boys been doing for going on 3 years now. Dying by the thousands. Dying for you, fool. I know, because I dug the graves. And all the time I'm digging, I'm asking myself when, oh Lord, is going to be our time. Well, time's coming when we're going to have to ante up. Ante up and kick in like men. Like men!
You watch who you call a nigger. If any niggers around here, it's you.
Smart mouth, stupid ass, swamp running nigger. You ain't careful, that's all you ever gonna be.
Now, I obviously didn't see this movie when I was 9 years old. This movie, among most of the people we know, was first seen in Mr. Topogna's eighth grade social studies class, if you were on that team.
On your side of on that team. I was not, unfortunately. Okay. I was one of the ones who, you know, was so angry that I couldn't have, you know, Mr. Topogna's class.
Exactly. So, I had seen it, I guess, in eighth grade. It was 1993 or so.
Mm-hmm. Or so, yeah.
So, it was about 4 years after it was out. And even then, it is so gripping, this movie. It's one of the best war movies ever made.
I agree.
And on the surface, it can really stumble. Like, as soon as the movie starts, you're like, Matthew Broderick's way too young.
Yeah, that was
he doesn't fit the role.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with Cary Elwes as his major.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you have such a heavy like racial, you know, fable almost. I mean, it's true, but the way it's told is so. I don't know what the word I'm looking for.
Gravitas? I mean.
No, yeah, that's a pretty good way to put it. It can only become preachy, and it can only become like pedantic.
Wrote a fine line.
Right, but somehow this movie treats it like a war movie about how important what they're doing, what their duty is, what the Civil War was about, and all that kind of stuff, but it never starts preaching.
Right.
And it has, you know, in the 54th Massachusetts, in that platoon, it has so many different point of views. It has, you know, Matthew Broderick is the, you know, Colonel Shaw, who he's just doing his duty. He doesn't look down on his black soldiers. He's proud to have his own platoon, and he's going to do what he can. And then you have some of the other white officers that are pissed off that this is their command. And then you have people like Denzel Washington, where he won his first Oscar.
That's right.
He is the former slave who's pretty much out to give white boys a whooping for what they did to him. And then there's Andre Brower, who's a...
He was excellent in that.
Oh, yeah, he's awesome. Probably one of, you know, I think almost equal to what Denzel Washington does, because Andre Brower is, you know, I mean... How would you say? I mean, he grew up a free man in Massachusetts. He is a very white African-American.
Yes.
For that time.
Right.
You know, he's very educated, very well-spoken. He's not in touch with... He doesn't understand what the Civil War is about, except... except scholastically. And he's just like, well, I'm going to join up. And he's in so in way over his head.
Way over his head.
And especially being there with characters like Denzel Washington.
Mm-hmm.
They're just
polar,
like,
opposite.
Yeah, and they just see right through him, like, what the hell are you? Don't know what the hell we're fighting for, do
right,
you?
Right.
And all of that put together, and just how this movie just escalates and escalates to that climax about how they're all a bunch of, you know, undisciplined, almost kids, to this very well regimented fighting force that is given an honor to storm that fort at the end.
Good afternoon, Colonel. You change your mind about that bottle I was talking about?
I want 600 pair of shoes and 1,200 pair of socks and anything else you've been holding out on us. Piece of rat filth.
Well, I'd love to help you, Colonel, but we just don't have any.
Not for niggers, you don't.
Not for anybody.
I see. Pity. I'll just have a look around, see that you haven't misplaced them, hmm?
Son of a bitch! Damn it, you can't!
Can't I? I'm a colonel. Nasty little cuss. You really think you can keep 700 Union soldiers without proper shoes because you think it's funny? Now, where would that power come from?
All right. Calm down. Look, have a drink.
And it just, every time I watch it, like, tears start flowing down my eyes. It's one of the most beautiful movies.
Yeah.
And, you know, Edward Zwick is kind of like a silent genius with his movies. Like,
well, I think one of our favorite movies from him is Blood Diamond, right?
Absolutely. Blood Diamond is amazing. Last Samurai is a great movie.
I love it, yeah.
I mean,
I don't know why he there's some sort of reputation with him in Hollywood. I don't know what it is. He's never been nominated as a director.
Right.
And whenever a movie of his comes out, it seems like it's poo-pooed off as some kind of crowd-pleasing, emotional-swelling adventure that will make good money, but is never taken seriously.
Yeah, it
I don't
seems
know
like,
why
it,
that
like
is.
It's playing down to its audience, and I'm like, when you look at his filmography, it's anything but that. So it's very strange.
It is
like
strange.
He has popular movies.
Very.
But
they're all very well done. I mean, even that World War II one he did in 2008, Defiance. I don't know if you saw it.
I saw that with Daniel Craig.
Not my favorite. Yeah, Daniel Craig. Not my favorite, but it was very well done.
Yeah. And
all his movies, one getting a slew of accolades. It's just never, or it never seems to be, rarely seems to be, with, you know, Best of the Year or Best Director.
Right, exactly. And, you know, between that and James Horner's gorgeous, gorgeous music.
Yeah, you're right. The music is insane.
And it's one of those things, just like, you know, hey, most of the excitement in Indiana Jones comes from John Williams.
Yeah.
And just like in this, you know, you have very, very, you know, patriotic, you know, feelings and white guilt feelings. And when you put James Horner's score on top of it, it's almost like unbearable.
I was just going to say unbearable.
Because that like, you know, angelic voice, you know, behind what's going on, and that theme song, it's so overwhelming, but in a good way.
In a good way, yeah.
You totally get lost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely agree with you. It's a great movie. It's definitely in my top 10. I think it may even be in my top 5. And
like I said, it's I know it's a strange choice for the whole, you know, idea of like a deserted island pick, but
there's so much to chew on.
There's so much to get out of it. There's so much to enjoy. There's so much to visually revel at.
Yes.
But it makes you feel so good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even though it is war and people die and the backstory of the war is so horrible. There's all that down. How the movie is handled, it's pretty much nothing but completely inspirational. And it just makes you feel great.
I agree.
And so that's why I had to go with it. I mean, I'm gonna stop my talk on that, and I just want to say, looking at the rest of the movies, when I was talking about stupid movies,
yes,
I mean, you got The Burbs.
Mm-hmm.
I have Back to the Future 2.
Right.
I have Christmas Vacation. I have Weekend at Bernie's. I have UHF. I have Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. I have The Wizard. I have Ghostbusters 2. Like, See No Evil, Hear No Evil. It's all these dumb movies that I have watched probably more than Last Crusade or Glory.
Right, right.
But
you'd have to try to smuggle some of those on with you, along with Glory.
Yeah, seriously. And then, you know, out of ones that are just very good movies, like The Abyss, and Do the Right Thing, and Parenthood.
I wouldn't want to bring Do the Right Thing to a deserted island.
I agree with you. But
as
I'm just talking about
as it is.
I completely agree with you because it's a brilliant movie.
Yes.
But in the polar opposite of Glory, it makes you feel really shitty.
Right. Which, of course, is its intent. So that's fine.
Exactly.
But not for deserved isle.
It is a complete success in what it wants to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah.
But just one more thing quick on Glory. I agree. I think probably one of its strongest suits, other than how it looks and sounds and everything, is that you're right, what you said before, you really get the whole gamut, the whole spectrum of characters, white and black, good and bad. You know, there's no black. I mean, there's black and white, but there's gray. Morgan Freeman was in this too, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's just another character to throw in there. You know, you just had so many different things going on, so many different people to attach to like, to not like. It's, you're right. It's just that balancing act.
So many point of views.
Yeah. What I was going to say before was I went with Indiana Jones. That was my number one, but an extremely close number two for me as far as bringing to a deserted isle would have been Dead Poets Society.
Really?
But, yeah. But we talked about it so extensively in the Robin Williams tribute, so I wasn't going to go with it.
Right.
But you know what? You didn't even mention this movie. I'm curious of your opinion of it, actually, because it's in my top five, is Batman.
I love the Michael Keaton Batman.
Okay.
But compared to, like, at least seven or eight of the other movies I just listed...
Yeah, it's
like, I mean, it sounds ridiculous, but if I'm on a deserted island, I would watch UHF, and I would be happy to have UHF much more than the Michael Keaton, Tim Burton Batman. And
I think see what you're Batman, saying. I see what you're saying.
Yeah, I think Batman is a great movie, and Jack Nicholson is perfect in it, stuff like that, but as a, you know, perpetual entertainment for repeat viewing and things like that, I don't
think
that's
the point.
I don't really think it holds up.
Gotcha. Well, I think we picked two good ones.
So, yeah, 1989, your pick, Last Crusade, and my pick was Glory, so...
Excellent. All right.
So we'll wrap it up, and we'll see what the year we pick for is next time.
Can't wait.
All right. All right, everyone. Thanks for listening. Do us a favor and go to our iTunes page for Kevin and JJ's Movie Mania podcast and leave us a review, or just head on over to our website, kevinandjjmovies.weebly.com. Look around. Let us know what you think. We have a little forum there so you can leave some comments, whatever you'd like. Again, thanks for listening, and we'll see you guys next time.